This hour, we're talking about writing truth. Putting what actually happened on paper, which in theory sounds easy, but it's not. Because the process of revisiting personal memories can be excruciating. This year, Therese Marie Myatt published a brutally honest and also wildly popular memoir called Heartberries. Therese grew up on the Seabird Island Band in the Pacific Northwest, and the story she tells about her life on the reservation includes alcohol and sexual abuse, poverty, and violence. She wound up hospitalized and diagnosed with PTSD and bipolar disorder, and there, she was given a notebook. She told Charles Monroe Kane she used it to write her way out of trauma.
In a coffee shop, I couldn't catch my breath and doubled over with pain. I remembered a man in the shower. I went outside. Closing my eyes only disoriented me further from the world.
Pain, shower.
And holding on to things made me feel too connected, receptive to every fiber of bench or tree. I called Casey. I wondered if he thought this was a real emergency or another dramatic thing. I'm constantly in some panic or despair, it seems. I wondered more than I could breathe. What do I do with my hands? I thought. What do I do with my eyes, which felt obscene in the light?
Can you tell me about the context of that story, of that reading?
Yeah, I was busy finishing my thesis, and I was accomplished enough where I felt like I was removed away from all the dysfunction I saw growing up. And then I was just kind of sitting there with my coffee. And the memories that were always around me in my life of my father. And I realized that all the things made sense. The drawings that I made that were disturbing to my mother, that illustrated things I shouldn't have known at that age. The moments between my father, which I didn't think were ever appropriate, and the fact that when I was younger, I did tell my mother that something had happened, but I feel like she convinced me that it was impossible, you know?
Yeah. Well, first, before we move on, I want to say I'm sorry that that happened. You made this decision to make this a memoir and not a novel, and of course, the central problem in your memoir is the fact that you were assaulted or molested by your father. You could do that as a novel as well. Why do you choose that to be nonfiction?
I think because if I were to tell the story with a fictionalized character, I would feel like the stakes were not as high. Personally, recollecting and interacting with my readership, you could feel the stakes on the page, you know, because it's a real story. Those things really happened, and the knowledge of that for the reader ups the ante so that they know that maybe things are not going to be okay.
It was interesting, though, because it is a memory. Can you trust memory to inform your own truth? I think you put it like memory can be a serpent.
Yeah. I trust very little in my life, especially the way that I've interpreted my past, because I did a lot of work to mitigate and minimize my pain. Through therapy, I was able to unpack everything and make sense of it. And I think when you render it that way, you feel more trusting, because I think when you've been hurt, you really do blame yourself and you doubt yourself in this way that I think so many people do that because they're afraid of the truth itself, you know, because if they had to admit that something happened, they would have to deal with it as well.
It's funny, you just used the word render. And I was thinking about rendering when you render fat, right? You have a piece of meat and you render the fat off and you boil it down, right? When I read your book, you boiled it down, man. That book is rendered. You took all the fat off, all the sentimentality out, and you got to the facts that are super painful. I'm curious, just as a person, it seems like it would be such a painful experience to just boil everything down to the essence of such pain.
I think I was tired and bored of hearing myself talk, trying to communicate to therapists or to my husband, I don't like myself off the page. I'm not as good as at communicating. So I wanted to see it on the page. I knew I could do a better job that way.
Did you have to go for lots of long walks while you wrote the book? It seems like you needed something deeper than just therapy to recover from writing such intensity.
Seeing on the page was intense, but it felt like a tangible thing you could hold in your hand as opposed to things that kind of work in your brain and don't do any good. And I think there's a will to keep working forward after you realize the people that should have taken care of you didn't. And I think that kind of heartbreak, it never really escapes you. I was already dealing with it every day.
You know, I was very uncomfortable. And one of the things that affected me that made me so uncomfortable is the book is full of shame. So full of shame that I didn't even know what to do with it when I read it. Like, I was looking at something I shouldn't be looking at. When you wrote it down, then you were able to overcome some of these? Or do you share the shame in some way, like because I picked up some of it, just a little bit, enough that I could handle, right? That alleviates it from you. And the more people that pick up on your pain, the more that it goes away. Does that make sense?
That's kind of how purging works. Letting go isn't as simple as writing a letter and ripping it up and letting it blow in the wind. You know, that's not really letting go. Letting go is really purging, and it's almost like an exorcism, right? You're
right.
Conjuring all the things you really do have to expel from yourself, and then you let go. For me, it healed me in a way that was deep, but I am not 100%. I'm not the person I'm going to be when I'm 50 years old, you know, but I'm better off.
But it's interesting because I think I'm better off. Because I read your work, even though it broke my heart.
The most beautiful work really punches you in the gut.
Yeah.
And I thought that was really important, is that I might as well give them the thing that I can barely bear. Because I feel like people often don't connect to, you know, they see a single mom on welfare, or they see a young woman who's trying to look for validity in her life through men, and they judge her, you know. And
right.
I wanted to illustrate that there was no need for that type of judgment because there was an entire world in that human being. And I think I had to hurt someone to expand their senses.
I want to read something to you that you wrote. It's something you wrote about your father that is clearly much bigger than him and about something else. Here, let me read it to you. As an Indian woman, I resist the urge to bleed out on a page, to impart the story of my drunken father. It was dangerous to be alone with him, as it was dangerous to forgive, as it was dangerous to say he was a monster. If he were a monster, that would make me part monster, part Indian. Can you take me back to when you wrote that?
Yeah, I had been trying to write for years about my father's death, because I grieved him even though I didn't want to. I didn't want to care for him at all. And I had to make sense of it, so I had told my husband to take the kids to the park for 2 hours because I had a good first line I knew how to walk in. And it was, my father died at the Thunderbird Hotel on Flood Hope Road, which was true. He died there. And that refrain, as it was dangerous to love him, as it was dangerous to be alone with him, that works like a prayer. It felt very much like the prayers my grandmother would impart to me. And I finished the essay, the first draft of the essay, in one sitting, because it took years, you know. In my head, I just kept going through, how do I tell somebody that my father died while admitting that he was a stereotype in some senses, and that I also feared becoming him, and I feared everything he was and what it made me, you know?
Yeah, I would say that's throughout the book. You ask a rhetorical question, but I'm going to ask it to you. Like, so if he was a monster and he's your father, then are you part monster? Is that in you?
I think there's something monstrous about abuse because even with my siblings, it makes you afraid to love somebody because you think you're damaged. You know, you think you've inherited some monstrous nature, and we all know all of us are really good to small children. We care about our nieces and nephews, and my brother and my sister have children, and my brother Guy has cats, which he treats like children. And I think in that sense, we've been able to prove the theory that we didn't deserve normal things like a good family wrong, you know?
Yes.
But it's always looming that you feel damaged. You don't feel like normal, quote unquote, normal. And I think in that sense, you feel monstrous.
I'm curious about something. You know, you've alcohol abuse, mental illness, an eating disorder, poverty, broken relationships, sexual abuse. You had a rough life on the reservation. Then you got your MFA. You have a best-selling book. You have a CRV. You've done fellowships. You're a professor. Do you feel guilty?
I don't know. I can't acclimate to it because to me it is everything, you know, being able to buy my kids winter jackets and take them out on vacation. I can't acclimate to it, but I believe my sons have. And I think that's really nice. Like my son is used to being able to ask me if he needs new shoes. And it's not a guilt trip like my mother would have where she would talk to me about how she's not even sure how to keep the lights on right now. And then we take on the burden and we would help her and raise her up like she really needed because being a single mom is rough and I'm not a single mom anymore. I just don't know how to accept so much good in the world, but I kind of just keep saying, wow, this is crazy.
You ask a question at the end of the book that I really liked, and you said, if rock is permeable in water, I wonder what that makes me in all of this.
Well, you know, the river is really important to me, and when you realize that something as strong and solid as a rock can really be shaped by something as tender as a stream, you know? Yes, I was deeply damaged, but I also, being through all of that, actually made me more intelligent. I'm able to read people when I walk in a room, and I can read a room and know what they need because I was such a caregiver to my family. And I'm also a better teacher because I have a lot of empathy for students that come in tired, you know, and I know that struggle. And I also have a lot of empathy for single mothers at school and people who have jobs. And all of that lived experience has made me, I think, a richer human being.
Thank you very, very much, and bless you.
Thank you. This was great.
Therese Marie Myatt's best-selling memoir is called Heartberries. It's been nominated for some of Canada's top literary awards. She's from the Seabird Island Band in the Pacific Northwest, and she's also on the faculty at the Institute of American Indian Arts in New Mexico. Charles Monroe Kane talked with her.